whenever you're ready.
The crowd's getting skinnier.
I made that observation. You do? They don't like us anymore.
Welcome, everybody, to the third discussion night on the transportation package. For the record, this is the Joint Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization, and it is May 15th.
17th.
Nope, I got the wrong agenda. Throw that one away. 17, 2007.
It is the same agenda as it turned out.
Alrighty, so we'll start back up where we left off. I just wanted to nicely remind people, take a glimmer at your calendar. Time's wasting. This is the night where we were hoping we would finish up the discussion and move forward with your agreement on the items to have a bill drafted. Once again, ground rule is that agreeing to have something drafted is not a vote on the bill at this point. We will come back to that. We schedule a work session on May 31st. That's when LC says they can have us a draft. And then certainly we would have a follow-up work session. And again, we would be voting on it sometime in early June. That's the grand plan. If we don't get done tonight, we will forward what we have and get LC started, and we do have time if we need to have more meetings. We want people to be comfortable in what we're sending forward.
I want to make sure I understood what you just said, that we're going to have a work session.
Was I that cloudy?
Well, I'm slow and old. You said a work session on the 31st. The schedule of hearings is also articulated in this calendar, so that people are going to...
I misspoke. I meant a public hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you for correcting me. Anything else?
Did you see
okay.
Older, you are, Betsy.
Are you all done yet?
We're done.
Okay. We're ready, so, Senator.
So once again, the other ground rule is this is not my plan, right? Even though, you know, I haven't seen that quote in the Oregonian or anyplace else. Thank you, Oregonian statesmen, so on and so forth. What we're doing is trying to make four corners, putting the five concepts together from the various work groups and coming up with what we want drafted and what is deconflicted. There were two items left over in the congestion and freight mobility group that we wanted to one we needed to talk about, and the second one we needed to reconfirm. There are some issues that have been raised that we are working on that we'll bring back to the committee later. The one thing that was left over, we sort of went around and got a nod. Of course, I have the advantage because I can see facial expressions, so you don't need to do up, thumbs up and thumbs down. And that was, as we thought, on the new vehicle excise tax that we would draft it at 1%. I sort of got that feeling from everybody else. Got some thumbs up, some head nodding, so on and so forth, and that's where we left it off. And unless somebody has a objection, that's where we left off last point. The last portion of the congestion. Yep.
May I?
Yep.
Please.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to get caught up. There was an escalator in that originally. Has that been removed? Is it just the 1% across?
It's 1%. The discussion we had in the last meeting was instead of going in an escalator of a 0.5 and 0.5 later on, it just drafted initially in 1% and go with 1% to start with.
That's the discussion
that we had. Unless, of course, there's more going once, twice. So we're going to move on from there. The other portion that we did not cover is this congestion relief and carbon reduction fund, the CRAY-CRAY, as Senate Representative Smith Warner developed the name. She didn't develop the plan, but she's the one who came up with CRAY-CRAY. And since she's absent, I'm now going to blame her, and I didn't say that last time. She is the one that came up with CRAY-CRAY. Basically, this is a floating name here. This is the funds left over from the excise tax that would be available to distribute in matching funds to other MPOs and other statewide projects. I want to walk through this with you for this drafting piece. You will remember I asked you to bring back your papers. Most of you did not. But on the paper you got last Monday night, it says theoretical construct. So if you can't see the board over here, it's not my fault you didn't bring your piece of paper back. Let me just walk through the concept of this so that we finish this up and get some input or some other direction for council to do some working. If you look up here, as I mentioned before, this is basically the excess funds that would be left over from the excise tax after a joint projects were completed in the metropolitan area. Remember the three major projects in the metropolitan area, Rose Quarter, the I-205 series, both the widening and the Abernathy Bridge, and then the third one is the 217 North and South Mount. After that's completed, there are excess funds left over for available for other MPOs to participate in. So let me walk through the structure here. as a refresher for you and to try and get input. And please interrupt me as we go along, because I'm going to have to look up there and tell you each piece and then look back at the same time. Basically, it is the excess funds from the statewide tax. Any bonding that comes out of that, because remember at the moment it is outside of Article 9, would be bonded using general fund bonds. There's a variety of those. There's what's called infrastructure bonds. There's state, believe it or not, there's what's called a state road fund bond, which is outside of the general fund. And so this match is generally 1-4 versus the typical 1-3 match that is utilized. The language on this will have to be very tight because, one, again, we talked about this. This is outside of Article 9. And so what we're talking about here is writing statutory language to prevent individuals from utilizing these funds in an inappropriate way. And I think we've also talked about the problem we have with future legislatures is those three magic words, notwithstanding, in preventing someone from sweeping these funds and using it someplace else. Yeah. However, having said that, let me do remind you, and I was lectured by legislative counsel after Monday evening, is that once those funds are bonded and out there, there is some legal obligations, and so you can't just take the funds away. So the revenue stream that is out there that it has to be utilized to pay for once a project is bonded has constitutional consequences that override the other areas. So you can't just take money that you're utilizing for that revenue stream. The initial list of projects we talked about in this fund are, in fact, those up in the metropolitan area, the big three we talked about.
So, Senator,
yep, go ahead.
Representative Leiber.
Thank you. So, I didn't get past this other point. I'm still not clear whatsoever on the carbon reduction transportation projects versus what we're doing. So that's the part I'm not getting in this fund. Because you've been talking about MPOs and those congestion.
Right.
So I'm trying to understand the carbon reduction part of this.
Okay.
That's the part I'm not understanding.
We needed a name to put on this, and so we put the carbon reduction fund on it. That's what it is. What this is, let me go back to the beginning, is once again, as we talked about in the previous meeting, and we talked about specifically transportation-related projects that would reduce congestion and increase freight mobility. And this particular name that Smith Warner thought was a pretty good name in our work groups, okay, we came up with. And we can change the name and call it anything else. The intent of this fund, though, is to keep in mind is that at least 90% of the money in this would go to pure highway funds, normal things you see under Article 9 purely on highway. We did, though, discuss previously, and the point on this, is there may be upwards of 10% of projects that are, for a better word, highway offset or carbon offset. And what we're specifically targeting, and refresh everybody's memory here, is we're talking about, for example, a multimodal facility. Multimodal facility that takes 30,000 trucks off the road and puts it on the railroad, right, is basically a highway offset, or if you want to call it a carbon offset, if you like the green name better. The goal there is you take the 30,000 trucks off the highway and put them on the train, and so therefore it increases freight mobility and it increases or decreases congestion. That's the intent of these projects. Basically, these statewide projects, rather 90% inside the highway fund, typical fund that you say for, let's say, widen the highway at Albany, because there's one of those in one of the MPOs. The Albany MPO has looked at the issue that we need the highway. ODOT has agreed that we need to widen the freeway down around Albany. That is the type of project. And as you'll see, and you'll remember, there's a secondary list that we're going to put in the bill, which is basically not approval for a project, but we'll just use, because I'm looking at him, because I got to turn left, no disrespect, Representative Olson, but I'm looking at you, is one of the MPOs, which is the Albany MPO, put in there the highway widening of Interstate 5, which is a congestion project down in Albany. That particular project to be named in the bill, not funded, and the reason it's named in the field is to provide that new state MPO, that local government entity, the ability to come back to the Oregon Transportation Commission later and say, this is a project that we have, you've identified it, if we raise half of the revenue through this mechanism, will you support it, do the planning, and of course they bring that, and we're going to cover that later in this slide right here, they bring that project back on an annual basis during the normal process of the legislature and then approve it. So when we say carbon reduction, what we're really talking about, because it's just a name we put up there, and I'm open to whatever creative name you have, Representative Lively, I call it highway offset. You know, basically highway or transportation offset. But the goal, again, is to be able to utilize this fund, too, for congestion relief and freight mobility issues that aren't purely pavement.
I think I would add to that, Senator, that to the extent that you take 30,000 trucks off the road, or to the extent that you move trucks through the metro area very quickly rather than having parked on the I-5 running their engines. You significantly reduce the amount of emissions.
So we have to agree that's called carbon reduction. I'm just kidding.
No. Call it what you want. It's that's what it does.
I have some boxing gloves, and you and Senator Representative Smith Warner can decide what the name is. I don't care what the name
is. I'll go for that. Thank you.
Senator.
The one Senator's thing right here. That didn't occur to me to offer during our work group was whether or not any of this money could be retained in a maintenance fund. I'm looking right over your shoulder, and I'm seeing Matt Garrett, and I'm thinking about the Megler Bridge, and I recall when that was paid for, and everybody went, well, that's done. And now, lo, these years later, in a marine environment, we've got to come back and paint the Megler Bridge. There's no money for it, and it costs a gazillion dollars. And I don't know whether or not any consideration should be given if we're going to enter into a period of continuous improvement where we're taking care of those things that we've built so we don't work ourselves into this kind of a maintenance crisis. Again, should we give any consideration to some kind of a sinking fund for maintenance?
Oh, you're talking to your other 13. I'm fine either way. Remember, I'm the facilitator.
It's a good point.
It's a very good point.
And I didn't bring it up earlier, right. So it's new news to our little work group, but it occurs to me that it might be something worthy of consideration.
And actually, I don't think it is news to the entire group, because I think you raised the issue once before in one of our meetings. You've raised the issue of these large bridge projects in which it used to be able to paint them with $1.95 and a couple of painters. And now, of course, it is the size of a normal project. It could be $50, $60 million to do one of these things.
I think that's the price range that the Megler is in, particularly facilities that are exposed to very corrosive environments like marine air.
Right. I think it's up to the members of the committee.
The point that's been made by ODOT is that the cost to paint that bridge is now more than the cost to build it.
That, Mr. Garrett is nodding.
Yes. Representative McLean has a question.
Also on this dialogue, Senator Boquist, that we talked a little bit about balancing the work that we were doing statewide and offering other MPOs or other regions or other areas an opportunity to work on some other kinds of congestion projects. And we wanted to make sure that we could tell the public exactly what the money was going to go for. And so that was why we had, you know, a tier two list that basically after those three larger projects that the money that was still coming in would be able to go to some very specific congestion type projects or off-road, whatever you want to call it, types projects that are going to overall help the system.
Correct. And if you look at and I slid forward, you've seen this slide before, but this is the secondary list, and what you'll see up there is there's SMPO, which is state MPO, whatever we call these new organizations, don't matter. But once again, we put a list up there, and we've reached out multiple times to them and say, what would you like put on your ticket list, basically your ticket to the OTC to have this discussion? And that list you have, it's in a form you previously had. I'm looking to see if I actually have it in front of me, too, but that says, the congestion work group. It's the secondary data list. You can see if you want to look at it. And again, this is I expect this to change as we have progressed. I believe all of our work group, you know, we had this list. Everybody sort of said, yeah, it's okay. And then as soon as we started having hearings, said, oh, yeah, okay, you're really going to do this. Are you really going to propose this? And then we got a few changes, and I would encourage those members of the public, especially that are involved in the MPOs, if it is the wrong project named on this list, you certainly need to be contacting us. You can either use myself or Patrick or one of the co-chairs to make sure, because two of these have changed, in case you don't know, from the days of our congestion group. I just point out that the Bend, the original state MPO Bend project that was put up there was a Highway 90, it just said Highway 97 lane widening, and they clarified that it's a North Highway 97 improvements, which isn't lane widening, but they have a different STIP name for it. And then the second thing that is actually up there is the Corvallis one ended up back on the list over here. And again, let me say this. These are not project approvals. This is basically your chit or your ticket to have a discussion with OTC. And I would expect that, as we all know, priorities will change. We could easily go into somebody's district that's there, say the Corvallis area over, and again, Representative Olson's area, and a new plant come in, you know, luckily an economic development plant on the edge of Benton and Albany, between Albany and Corvallis, and suddenly we now have a new major congestion problem, and so the priority would shift. Going back to the process, as Representative McLean talked about, if you look, the initial list is the big three. And then once again, this future definition is the key thing, and we really do need input from members on this. I mean, if you're going to write a statutory requirement that says you can only spend this on traditional highway fund items or items that offset that congestion, or you're going to add something like Senator Johnson put in there, we need to have improvement. And I would expect when the four-corner draft comes out, we're all going to look at it and say it's not tight enough, and we need to put additions onto that. So keep that in mind as we go forward. I would the secondary list we talked about down here, that secondary list is really, again, just a placeholder. How we would envision and how we discuss this envisioning going forward is for these secondary projects that would be available from excess funds that are out there, is that an MPO, for example, would come to the OTC, and we're going to put into the bill an advisory board to the OTC, because remember, our traditional way of funding funding gas tax is 50% to the state, 30% to the counties, 20 to the cities. If you look right up here, what we're saying is that advisory board that would determine whether these projects are feasible initially from these MPOs would be made up of the OTC at presently, which is 5 members, and then 3 members from the county, 3 county members, and then 2 city members to try and replicate the 50, 20, 30 of these statewide significant projects. And so we're trying to keep in line with that and honoring that 50, 30, 20, even though this is a segregated fund.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you go back to your I think it's your previous slide. Right, in that paragraph that says initial projects in statute with 3 big counties. Can you explain what would happen if one of those projects didn't happen? The second or third time we discussed it, but it's I guess all of us need to understand more clearly the nature of the funding mechanism. Are we stuck with the I-5 core? What happens if the MPO doesn't get its act together in a timely fashion, or frankly doesn't want to do it or can't? What's our fallback position? What's the recommendation?
The discussion we had previously, and we actually did discuss this in a previous meeting. If you look at this and say, for example, the metro area decided they did not want to proceed for some reason, and it wasn't challenged in court, and so we are collecting the excise tax. What would then happen is for any of the projects on the list that's up here to go forward, it would have to come back to the legislature, and most likely to just be blunt, this would be in February because the timelines in here will trigger. You would come back in the month of February and the legislature would have to determine if we're going to proceed with any of these projects. I would point out to you when the state suddenly would have to pay for 100% of this, because this list right here, just if you remember, is $1.1 billion. The state is not in a position at the moment to pay for $1.1 billion and do preservation, maintenance, and others, is the legislature would have to come back and look at this and determine if any of these could go forward. You will also recall we had a tolling and congestion discussion, and the most likely two that you could do tolling on is I-205 Abernathy and I-205 widening. So if we did not have full funding out of the excise tax to produce a project, and we had to go to public-partnership, like Representative Smith points out, and the federal matching funds across in a 3-tiered program, the most likely place that you could toll would be I-205. But again, Representative Bentz, that decision will have to be made by the legislature in February. In the bill, we will write it to refer it back to the legislature in February, because if we're collecting the money and we don't have any projects, it's up to the legislature to provide the directions to OTC in the future.
He's
got a follow-up question.
And then I just was trying to put the process you just outlined for those projects together with the 50-30-20 approach to the other projects. The approval of future list, we're not delegating the change that would be necessary as a result of one of the larger projects falling off the list, as it appears we are doing with that top paragraph.
Exactly. The advisory board going forward, in an ideal world, we are frankly constructing the 3 major congestion projects in a joint venture with the Portland metropolitan area. The remaining funds in the excise would be available for these MPOs to apply for. the first one, basically first come, first serve, comes in and applies for it. That application project, as we point out, process is to, at the bottom of this page right here, is to go to OTC. OTC will put in to have an advisory board made up of the Oregon Transportation Commission. That advisory then have three county representatives and two cities, so that we're trying to maintain the 50-30-20. They would then make a recommendation and come up with a conclusion. Yes, the financing package from the MPO in Albany, we'll just use Representative Olson as an example. They have a financing package, it would work. They, of course, then the OTC would forward that to the legislature in the next legislative session. Remember, we're meeting annually. Whether that's in a joint committee here or through the normal ways and means process, would bring that project to the legislature. So each one of them is approved as they go forward, and we maintain oversight. And Representative McLean has a question.
Representative McLean.
I think it's not so much a question as just a commitment that as subgroup committee members, we sat and worked very diligently with the MPO that was ready to go and was making a firm commitment. And so even though I know we always have to look at what if, it's a situation where I think that the actual process that Senator Boquist has pointed out is with a commitment of 50% from the MPO and 50% from us. So our first commitment and our money is being committed to those three projects as statewide congestion projects of importance to all corners of the state. And so I think it's fine for us to look at that second tier of ideas or processes, but I think we need to be working forward today on how do we get it written in a way that is doable for both the MPO and for the state, and that we're protected. And I think that we've done that.
And I would follow up that just to give you the other position on that is that in the language that was discussed in the work group, and it's actually in here in the fine print if you look at it, is that to Representative Smith's key point that is very, very valid, is if we were to get federal matching funds for any one of these projects, once again, this is a 50-50 deal. So if we receive for Project A $20 million, $10 million gets credited against the 50% for the state, and $10 million gets credited against $50 million for the MPO. This is just a 50-50 fair and balanced approach from both sides.
That would just, if we got that money, that would just accelerate our ability to go to the other MPOs.
That's exactly right. Remember, the I don't want to say the excess funds go into this pool in the congestion relief and non-carbon reduction fund from Representative Lively. Okay, it goes into that pool, whatever we want to name it, and we're going to pass the hat with names here shortly, and then the process would go forward. Each project gets buy-in from the state, and I'd also point out to you, just to remember, is that the initial taxing authority that would go to the first MPO would be in this bill, but it's the legislature, say in February, they say hypothetically, or a year from February, again, Representative Olson's MPO down in Albany came forward, whatever plan they had would have to be enacted by the legislature then. And so there's multiple checks and balances to ensure that we're fiscally sound and we don't injure our bond rating in any manner.
Representative Bentz.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, the process of selection has been coordinated with, on these larger projects, have been coordinated with the MPO in Portland. So, there's no fear that there hasn't been a prioritization because the legislature has asked, basically Metro, what's the most important thing to you. So that part is done. And then you explained to us last time that there would be a door opened, if that's the proper analogy metaphor, for your by the legislature for Metro to raise a tax or a registration fee, which would be the foundation then for the match imposed upon those folks within that district, that MPO. Let's assume that this all happens and the excise tax is held to be valid and the MPO raises its money and the money is all thrown into a bucket. Who's in charge of the project?
The project is the MPO will put, just to go through the semantics of exactly how it's collected. First off, presently gas and registration fees are collected through ODOT DMV registration side, and ODOT manages the gas tax collection. So the funds would come in mechanically in line. The funds would come into ODOT, into that fund. An intergovernmental agreement would have been established to move forward. That intergovernmental agreement in concert with the state treasurer, because remember there's a bond rating issue here, for those of you who know ways and means, would identify how much funds need to go into the reserve account at the Treasury to ensure we pay for the bonding payments as we go forward. Okay, and so the project then is put in, and ODOT constructs the project. I think if you all know in the ODOT project sequence of how they do it, local government is intimately involved with these projects. There's all kinds of outreach. We've actually said that maybe we have too much outreach. That has been raised by this group here, in which, you know, we might have too many hoops we have to jump through, and it might take too long to do projects, and we should look at streamlining, and that's in our accountability piece. The issue of the projects themselves, which you alluded to, is we sort of agreed on. Let me back up and make sure everybody understands and restate this. The congestion relief and freight mobility areas was established by the state of Oregon. It was established through OTC, the governor's task force, and a freight mobility task force here in Oregon. The overall projects and this list of projects right here that's on the screen was established by the state of Oregon statewide. It's at this point, when that chart was on the wall, at which point one of the MPOs said, have you thought about splitting this with somebody? Would you consider partnering with us if you did these projects that were state selected? So it's actually the state who identified these projects first, figured out this is what we need to do, and then it's the MPO who came in next and said, hey, if you were interested in doing all three of the major ones, we would be interested in sharing that cost responsibility with you. Representative Plain has it.
I think it's important to know that in that subcommittee group, it wasn't just the MPO that said that these were the most important congestion, big mega projects. We had the truckers that came in and said that the Rose Corridor was the most important thing to them. We had others who came in and said, this is important to me too, and I live over on the east side of the state because it's going to help us get our products to where we need to get our products, or get our crops to where we need to get our crops. So these are statewide congestion projects through a state process, and we had all these partners show up and say, yeah, we want to be part of making sure that this is a priority in this investment portfolio.
I would just add, just for the record, I was actually surprised at the philanthropic nature of Metro, no disrespect. You're actually coming forward and say you'd help solve 50% of this problem. And I think it's a bold move on the part of Metro, JPAC, the tri-counties, the cities and up there to come forward and say, hey, this is a big enough issue that, you know, to us, and we believe to you that you've identified your projects, that we think we should do these now instead of waiting 2, 3, 5, 10 years. And so it was really their initiative to us that brought us to the point where we are today. And I want to actually publicly thank the staff of Metro, Port of Portland, City of Portland, Beaverton, all of the individual staff members and the elected members that have been out there working on this behind the scenes, because this is a novel approach that's not been used before, at least that I know of.
Keep in mind, it's a reasonable sharing between the local areas and the state, given that every place we went in our 11 hearings, the business community that showed up said, this is our biggest problem. We're an exporting state, and we have to move our product through there.
Okay. With that, I mean, just the last couple of minor items.
Representative Betts.
This is a terrifically important point, and it's worth saying it twice or maybe even three times.
Okay.
So I apologize if you've already answered this question twice before. But the need dramatically exceeds the amount that this program raises. This is a great first step, but it's certainly a modest one, certainly bigger than the state has done in the past. But one might ask, and I think you have the answer to this, what happens next? Because the funding stream that has been identified, the excise tax of 1%, will be allocated to these big projects, and that we can wave goodbye to that funding stream for many, many years as those things pay off. And the same would be true for Metro, having decided to invest in this particular project. What do we say to everybody else about what happens to these other projects that we know we're going to have to fund? And I know you have the answer. I think it rhymes with, well, it is congestion relief and tolling, but perhaps you can go into that and explain how this mechanism provides a bridge, if you will, to that future.
2 points. This is the next list right here. This list is not something that, you know, where it says state MPO, and I've used Representative Olson, who is right up here, Albany I-5 Auxiliary Lanes. This has already been identified as a statewide project of significance. Those of you that are on Ways and Means have seen it. Those of you that are on your transportation committees have seen it. So that's the projects going out in the future that we have that have been identified. Some of them we agree with, some of them we don't agree with them. The second point is the excise tax does have, even after bonding, once we cash flow part of it, bond it, there is some remaining funds. The next question comes back down, once again I'm pointing out to you, is that if OTC sends a project in February of 2019, in a short session, February 19, they send us a project from the Albany MPO and says, you know, they would do this if you did that. We are in a position then once again, because we have a fund and a mechanism set up, a sharing robber, and we'd be right back in the legislature to back to sort of what Senator Johnson alluded to and something that says we started at 1%. Would we possibly raise a excise tax by a quarter of a percentage point 3 years from now to match another project that's out there? That's open to the future legislatures there. Remember, we originally said and was actually suggested to raise the excise tax 1% the first year, and then several years out, raise it by another half a percentage, and then raise it out by another half a percentage per year. And in fact, sliding this whole thing towards the right in many aspects, even though we've looked at this in the spreadsheets, does make sense. And the reason it makes sense is sliding things to the right is there are just implementation barriers from legacy computers and everything else problems that are out there. But this starts us on the road over a 20-year period to start repairing, sets a process in place, a structure in place, to start addressing these over a 20-year period. And once again, it's up to the future legislature, but if, you know, you'll just say Salem Kaiser right here comes in and says they would share half the cost of it, it's, you know, I would just say the next legislature is probably nuts not to do that, because our other option is pay for it ourselves somewhere in the future. So we start down the road, and that's why even if you look at this and you look at the spreadsheet that you have, even though it runs out 10 years, many of these projects aren't even completed till 12 or 14 years. So what we're really sitting before us right now is a 12 to 14 year plan. It is unfortunate, I do admit this, that, you know, the headline that you see that the editors put up in the Oregonian says legislature proposes $1.1 billion spending in Metro in Portland, and Portland's going to get it all. Okay, that's over 10 years, folks. And oh, by the way, that's half shared here and half shared there. And those details, in fact, to the reporter's credits, are in the article, not in the headline.
Yeah.
But that's the problem.
Yeah.
Okay, what I want to do, if the good vice chair has exhausted itself in questions, is that the last couple of things, at least on this
that's
topic.
That's doubtful, but please.
That's right. Okay. The last section I wanted to point out here is, once again, to remind everybody, because of the way this is structured, I mean, we have not passed a transportation package that has not been referred or been referred and got the signatures and got on the ballot, and we've never passed a transportation that I know of that has not ended up in a courtroom. So we just have to assume, regardless of what we do, even if it's perfect and everybody loves this and it goes out 30 votes in the Senate and 60 votes in the House, we're probably going to get sued and someone's going to probably file the paperwork for a referral. It's just a risk we face. It's happened every single time in the past, and it successfully actually happened once, I believe, in 1999. And so the whole straight line to the Supreme Court for challenges and all of that get put in the bill, too. With that, the secondary list of projects, once again, I just want to remind less committee members and more of the MPOs, because we have MPO representatives back here, if your placeholder you want in the bill isn't the right project, we sort of need to know, because it's you we're trying to help. So, and again, several of them have changed. The next slide I have, we can either at your discretion.
Before we move, is everybody okay? We're finished up on congestion.
Smith-Warner, who I've been beating up heavily on. Cray-cray.
I hear that. I would just, number one, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I would like to remind people that I did not come up with the fund or the name of the fund. I merely used my prodigious acronym skills to turn it into a pronounceable word. Thank you very much.
And Senator,
I'd like you to confirm that publicly, Senator Boquist.
Senator Beyer, Representative Smith-Warner, just so you know, Cray-Cray is open to discussion now, and Representative Lively, in your absence, is dreaming up a new acronym with a different name.
To move it along, we'll blame it on staff.
Right.
Okay. But that's okay. Actually, I had a real question as well. Hang on.
Okay.
So two quick things. Number one, have we talked about, in these shared projects, have we talked about cost overruns?
About what?
Cost overruns and the idea if we're doing 50-50, who's going to cover the cost overruns?
50-50.
Yes. We actually, yes. If there are cost overruns,
You're going to pay for them?
It is, yeah, it's 50-50. However, let me go back and point to this slide and put everybody's, what we talked about previously right here is actually setting a budget probably less than the optimal. There are contingency funds and other things in here, accountability issues. It's trying to identify a fund and say if the project we thought was going to be $450 million, we might hold back 20% to cover cost overruns you're talking about, might ask them to scale it that direction. The second issue that addresses cost overruns is once to and I just keep harping on it because you cannot fit it. Representative Smith keeps saying federal funding, is any federal funding, of course, then reduces the cost to us, creates a contingency fund, which we can then use to address cost overruns. And then the next piece, there are several of these in which we've agreed we're going to at least draft and look at the possibility of tolling or congestion pricing in some of these areas, which again reduces the 50-50 share, at least on the tolling side. It does not reduce it on congestion pricing because you cannot raise money by congestion pricing.
Okay. And then, again, I apologize because I missed the beginning, and I know we talked a little bit about this last week, but just where we're going to end up with cost sharing on trucks versus cars, depending on the whole be imposed situation, because I don't want us to be in a situation where we are doing these projects without cost sharing.
We are still working on that. We have taken your advice, and we have asked competent counsel and legislative staff and others to research the options on that.
Great.
Okay?
Thank you.
There is no easy answer, despite your optimism, good representative. Okay?
I continue to hold it nonetheless.
And we continue to be optimistic.
Anything else before we move on?
Good.
That goes to drafting then.
All right.
Move on.
So at this point, we have two choices, Mr. Chair. And I don't know, you're looking at the clock because it's clear off my right shoulder.
Got an hour.
We can either go into, we can start the two blocks that are left, our accountability and the multimodal. Which one do we want to do first?
Madam Chair?
I think we're all here, so we can do
You want to go back to multimodal?
Multimodal.
Okay.
We have a full complement of committee members tonight, so thank you.
Okay, so we're going to go back to the multimodal group. I will apologize in advance. This will be my worst evening because this is my worst topic because I don't know a whole lot about this one. I will outline to you and we'll open the discussion up, and I will go to my questions to be able to ask the right questions in terms of it. What you see is the slide that came out of the presentation before, the multimodal. That's there. Remember, we talked about before the possibility of at least looking in the drafting of as lottery funds decline. Let me make a correction because I did hear this. We said happy days are here again. The lottery's doing just great. That's not what the revenue forecast said. That's not really what the state economist said. The state economist said we're going to leave the shortfall in place temporarily, which moves the $100 million down to about $71 million in place. It is optimistic, no disrespect to my colleagues across the river in Washington, but you know everybody has recognized that their food was complained about the first week, the odds were complained about, and the indications are, so you know from the state revenue forecast, that there's been just a minor reduction in the area on the bridge footings around the Portland area. Those establishments in the lottery that are around the edges of the bridges coming south into Oregon have seen a minor decline in revenue. It's not anything close to what we anticipated before. However, it's still too early. The casino in the north's only been open a couple weeks. And so we are stuck for 2 years, unless something happens between now and June 15th. We are stuck for 2 years for the revenue forecast, which is, of course, forecasting $71 million, I believe, is the appropriate number that's available, not $100 million. So there is a shortfall in that fund, but that was planned in the Joint Ways and Means process. So if you look at the rail projects that are over here, this, the left-hand column that's right here, these are regional and statewide projects, $53 million with 30% local match. These are pretty well identified, I believe, in terms of statewide significance. And then the second list before is bike and ped, $7 million in that. And if I recall correctly, that is actually off-road areas. Mm-hmm. That's off-road. That's yes. Not the 1% matching. That's off-road bike paths in areas across the state. Once again, there's some confusion, just to recall it. The bottom corner, I don't want to hit anybody's eyes here. Transit is a standalone outside of this. Transit's not in here. I just want to remind everybody, there seemed to be some confusion at one point. The next column is projects of statewide significance, and again, that's the typical existing multimodal process that we have now. I know there's going to be some discussions on that and the issue of should we use it the way we're using it now, should we streamline that. I believe there's some members can adjust to that. The $40 million in there, and then there's the issue that's been raised on rail projects of being a 50% match and a 30% match, and I think the derelict vessel stands alone. I'm going to have to go to my question list and actually rely on the vice chair because, once again, this is my weak link here because I, unfortunately, have had little or no experience in multimodal in my 12 years in this legislature. So I would open it up for comments on multimodal and clarification since this is my weak link.
Representative Lively.
So, and I appreciate that. So my comments or my questions goes back to kind of the multi-year look at this because the goal is to get it away from lottery. We've heard a lot of conversation about the excise tax. In a previous conversation, I think we talked about potentially moving for this, but as I understood the excise tax and what we've currently identified, I don't see that there's money to put into these projects. So I'm trying to understand the nexus of those things, moving away from the lottery. Now we're relying on excise tax that we've used up. So where do we get the money for these projects?
We're going to pass the hat for you, Representative.
Yeah.
Okay. In the original modeling that we had where we had a 1% and then a phase-in of 5%, 0.5% in the excise tax farther out, like 2, 4, 6 years out, we envisioned doing that farther out as we pushed out. We may still have that opportunity, but you're absolutely correct. In the short term, I mean, here we are at the position where we're back at the lottery where we're forecasting $71 million. The state economist says it doesn't look like it's going to be that, but we're not going to change our forecast. We may well, in fact, see those revenues. And as you know, at least the ways and means and revenue folks know, that when we get through two or three forecasts and they actually allocate that back, the revenue, we can still spend those lottery funds that come in. It just has an impact on the ending fund balance and things along that line. That's obviously a topic we're going to have to address as we go forward if there's not an alternative funding mechanism. And I'm fully open, and I think maybe somebody could speak to that better than I am because I'm not the expert.
Senator, I would be happy to. When the multimodal work group began to meet with Representative Olson and Representative Smith and myself and a number of people in this room attending, the idea of moving away from lottery, I think, became significant because of just the things that you mentioned about, I think, the lack of availability of that money as time moves forward. So, and that was why we looked at a couple of different ideas. One, we looked at about 60 ideas, Mr. Malik, we looked at many, and that was why the aggregate tax came forward. We were looking for a way to begin to move away from lottery. I understand that there was a vote taken in the last meeting where that became an unpopular way to raise revenue for multimodal. But the reason we did it was really apparent. And then, Senator, when you went through with the congestion work group and came forward with the new excise tax, that became a really logical place for us to go to actually transition totally away from lottery to that, which I thought became very attractive. It sounds as though if we're not going to do the escalator and the excise tax would not be available to fund Connect, we're going to fall back to lottery. If the excise tax and the aggregate tax are not available, then we're right back where we started, which I think is very unfortunate. I would like to see us reconsider the aggregate tax as a fallback to whether or not the excise tax even moves forward at all, whether there ends up being an escalator to help fund these multimodal projects that we think are all important as we look at congestion and freight mobility as we look into the next 20 years. So that would be my two cents worth that I would like to add, but that's the rationale as to why we ended up where we are with your wonderful idea of using the excise tax for this. So right now, we're in a little bit of a tenuous position with trying to fully fund Connect Oregon.
Representative Smith has a comment.
Yeah, I want to follow up on the comments of the co-chair. It's kind of interesting that we've said no to the aggregate tax, and I hear that. I hear that loud and clear from a handful of you. But to me, it seems like we ought to have a conversation with the aggregate folks and find out for their participation, is there a way that we can make this a win-win? And I'd get to see us do that. And I think that's a conversation we ought to have. Before we completely say no to the idea, let's sit down with the industry and say, can we create a win where everyone feels comfortable with this concept?
Good point.
Senator Johnson.
Senator Johnson.
Two disparate points. One of them is some of us have talked to the industry, and I'm all for conversation all the time, but I think the feeling that I've had in speaking with various producers and the industry association is this is a very unpopular idea. Second, completely disconnected, is I don't think we should ever lose track of the magnificent federal match that comes with aviation. It is the most bountiful of all the matches. One state buck gets you 9 federal bucks, and I just don't think we should lose track of that.
Right. Thank you, Senator.
I do want to go back, because I'm looking at my question list here, because I'm not an expert on this. Is there any discussion on the numbers or the percentages that are actually up on the board? And for example, marine rail, aviation, statewide project, $53 million with 30% match. Any comments or opposition? I just want to make sure we cover this so that the poor drafters have some sort of guidance. If this slide is not the guidance, then what is it? I believe there's a question there.
Senator, I think it's important to note, too, that on the regional and statewide projects, which is basically Connect Oregon as we know it, it's the basic Connect Oregon process that we've been in now for 12 years, the 10% that goes to the regions is still in there, and I want to make sure that that's noted because that was important to a lot of people, and it's not up on the slide. The 30% match has not changed. That's what's been in effect now for a session.
And you didn't mention the match either.
Right.
I am very supportive of the rail match. When I think about the last Connect Oregon cycle, if memory serves me correctly, the rail got 1/4 of the available funds and has a total of something like $28 million that they have garnered in Connect. And those are huge corporations, and I like the fact that we have a bifurcated system here, recognizing those that are able to pay and some local jurisdictions not so much.
Representative Vince.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to return to the aggregate tax for a minute. I want to thank the Representative McEwen and Representative Smith for the work they did in thinking it up. And again, absent the excise tax concept, I'm sure we would be paying a lot more attention to it. There are a series of reasons why I think we should delay further consideration of the concept, and it has a lot to do with the number of taxes already in the bill. And when you start adding them up, they're a lot. And so to add another one in as a fallback position, yes, adds undue weight to an already heavy lift. What I would recommend we do is put it aside, and if the worst happens, excise tax is held to be not workable in this context, then we need to bring that back up for review. There's another reason in it, and once we had discussed this at length in trying to figure out how to address the issue, I've also met with the aggregate folks on it. The amount that it raises is modest if you limit it to just sales of aggregate to governments, and so which would be consistent then with one aspect of the concept. But the number that it raises, if it's adjusted in that fashion, is very modest. And I would suggest it's not worth adding it to a long list of taxes that are already in the bill. That's why I would continue to oppose it as a concept, at least at this time.
Representative Smith and Representative Lively.
Yeah, I just want to make sure folks understand why I'm holding the position I hold. I represent 5 port authorities, 2 interstates, a Union Pacific mainline, I don't know how many airports, water terminals. And I got to share with you, the more I start looking down this panel, there's 14 of us, Mr. Chair, and I think I'm counting 7 votes who potentially could support an aggregate tax. And so I think we need to further this conversation and see if there's a win-win on this issue with the industry. And if there's not, I have no problem backing off. But I think we should have that conversation.
Representative Lively.
Thank you. So, and I don't disagree with what Representative Smith said, but so my bigger concern is we chose to take a 10-year plan, a 10-year look, and then a 20-year look. And then we say, though, and what I see, some very critical components of that, we're going to take a biennium a one biennium, a two-year look at best, because as the lottery dollars decrease, I guess that's what really concerns me. Are we serious about a package that addresses all these modes over the 10 years, or are we saying, yeah, we're only serious to a point, and things that, from my standpoint, can help with carbon reduction or whatever you want to call those things, we're saying, but they're not quite as important, and so we'll take a one-year look at that or year and a half and then come back. That's just unacceptable to me if you really want to talk about a package. Now, I'm not saying the only answer is the aggregate tax, so I would support that, but I just think from the standpoint of this bill, putting this together, that has to be in there somehow with a longer-term view of how we address these needs.
Okay. Senator Winters and Senator Johnson.
You know, my observation is that we did take a vote, and some of us have talked to the industry, and so I would share that those of you who have not, maybe that's where the conversation should be. I suspect that most of us have, and if I recall, and even if I recall the vote, that even though the good co-chair wasn't here, her vote was counted. So I think that the majority did prevail. And so I'm still the same where I was when we met on Monday.
To use a transportation analogy, we don't have to decide tonight. We're giving guidance to the drafters. You already pointed out we're running out of runway. I would suggest, given the preceding discussion and tonight's discussion, that we suggest to the drafters they draft without the aggregate tax, and we can slug this out at a future meeting.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Byrd. So I want to support what Representative Lively and what Representative Smith were talking about, in that all these different subgroups that we had, there's important work and there are priorities in there, and I'm concerned that we'll slowly whittle away at some of the items in the package because of the lack of the funding stream. And if folks, I support having an aggregate tax, putting that on the record, but second of all, if we don't have the aggregate tax and we need to pay for some of these, then I suggest that we need to come up with a substitute for a revenue stream for that. Because in essence, by just taking away the potential revenue stream, then I'm concerned that it just could just go away. And so I would like to make certain that we come up with another revenue stream if it's not that one, if that's what the committee decides. So I just wanted to put that on the record. And
thank you.
I want to support what Senator Taylor just said, but I think I want to go one more step, and that is we did identify a backup, and the backup was the excise tax. And we also gave a nod that we wanted it written at 1%. But I think we need to give a commitment to that subgroup, because they did just as much work as anybody else's subgroup, and they made commitments and tried to work on what the need was and also what the folks in that group, including Representative Smith, know to be true, which is this is just as important as any other part of our transportation system and unique. And that we need to be willing to come back and talk about that 1% excise tax if we're not willing to talk about the aggregate tax.
And I think, thank you all for your comments, and I think I'll put a bow on it by kind of following up with what everyone just said. And Senator Taylor, thank you, because you were thinking exactly what I was. Yeah, the whole goal is to fully fund Connect. If we can't do it with the sources, then I think it's incumbent upon us to find something else. I would challenge you all that after 8 weeks of looking for money that is doesn't have an Article 9 nexus is very, very difficult. I spent a year on a rail work group trying to find money for rail in 2011. We were not successful. These are very, very difficult things to do. So I would suggest that if we are not successful in moving forward with the aggregate tax, that we either commit to that escalator on the excise tax, and that we try and find another source. I agree that we've committed to the process. So thank you all. And now, Senator Johnson, on that note, let's wrap this up, and we'll move on, and we'll have more conversations about this in the future. But thank you for a good conversation.
Senator Johnson. Center.
I'm not quite ready to wrap it up. This doesn't. Thank you for your instruction, though.
Certainly.
The one other piece of this that I think we need to be mindful of is to make sure that the rules of Connect continue to work, assuming that we find a funding source for Connect. There has been a little bit, in my opinion, of slippage in how the Connect process has been undertaken, and making sure that we have accountability, rigor, and appropriate sideboards on wherever the source of money is, I think is important.
Yes. Thank you.
Someone's working on that, I thought.
We are.
You are. They're working on it. Yeah.
So, Representative, can I just ask our
facilitator,
our witness, can you explain again you mentioned earlier that you would suggest to us, the group, or your group is suggesting to this group, that from the excise tax you would take 7 to 8 to 9% and allocate it to exactly this, or was I missing the point?
10%
or 10%, some number.
You were missing the point because it was 10%.
Okay, great. Now, so follow up, Mr. Chair. So there's 10% of $73 million a year. Is that what it is?
Let's back up. Okay. Yeah. So the original proposal was to put 1% in an escalator of a half a percentage point over 6 years, going up a half and then going up again. That then created the excess funds. We previously decided that we were going to draft it at 1%. So I will just point out to you that if you have 2%, 10% of that is X, right, that, you know, if you put an escalator, I'm trying to do the mathematics here for everybody, is if you put a quarter percentage point escalator in it in the future someplace, then you've made up the difference and you dedicate that towards multimodal if you want to do that. There are other options to do that out there, or slide the escalator out of, and just instead of making it 1% to 2%, 1% to 1.25, or 1% to 0.5. Because the challenge is going to be, colleagues, is essentially, you know, we've all of our work groups went through all of the entire list of financing options that the Task Force on Finance went through, and we've come up with rocks and an excise tax. So we're down to two. So that's what we have on the table, and I'm all ears, because I'm just the facilitator and trying to prod the 13 of you sitting up there. If you have the number three that's not rocks or not the excise, I mean, we should probably share it with everybody else.
So to be clear, the proposal – I'll get that. To be clear, the proposal is that we would designate $100 million a year for multimodal, targeting – first choice was lottery funds, recognizing that that's hard to hold the legislature to that, but that's what would be in the bill for the future, with a backup plan, we said, of a piece of the excise tax, and then rocks if we can get to it.
There you go.
Representative?
So for some reason, I was operating on the impression that it was $100 million of biennium, but what's $100 million? 50 a year, 100 by annum. But I never really heard the answer of how much of the 1% could be or might be or isn't available for such an allocation to Connect.
There's probably at some point the debt service rises to about $70 million, but the answer to your question is when we run the, and I've run the numbers at 1% across, there is some availability out there. The second point that I will go back to in terms of a discussion that we have previously had, and that is if you do a cost constraint, find the right slide right here, where we talked about right here, you can see it, is if we set aside 20% of that funding, right? 10% of that, of course, would be funding that would have come from the MPO, and 10% of funding would have come from the excise tax, that you do create funds. The answer to your question is there a dollar amount in there. I could not tell you the dollar amount sitting here right now because we've not run the numbers, but there is a dollar amount in there, and there is a percentage that could be set aside. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I do not know the answer to this. Is on the lottery side where we say it's $71 million, is that bonded money? Is that you take an X amount of loan and bond that, so it's some small amount of like $5 or $6 million bonded, right? I'm asking that question. Hopefully, Representative Smith's not in that, because I don't know the answer to that question. maybe he could enlighten us.
I had a different issue I wanted to visit on. That is correct what you're saying. Can I just share a thought, though, if we can go back to the original page? You know, I want to appeal to everyone to remember that when the lottery was first created back in the 80s, it was for economic development. And the pie was this big, and it had one slice. That pie has now been sliced many, many times.
Yes.
And so part of what the Intermodal Work Group was trying to do was find a source of income that would not be susceptible to the voters of Oregon and to the continued dilution of lottery resources. I'm of the opinion, and it's why I'm so adamant on finding a new source of revenue. We are one citizen initiative away from losing lottery dollars for economic development. We're just one. And at that point in time, if intermodal's important to Oregon, we're one citizen initiative away from not having a funding
years
stream
ago when the lottery
for
first passed, it
intermodal.
Was supposed to all be for economic
and so
development.
If the idea being brought forward from this committee is not the correct one, I think we collectively need to step back and say, what is the correct source of income? And who knows what it may be. But we can't let, in my view, we can't let this package move forward without figuring out a permanent, long-term funding source for intermodal activity. And I don't know what it is, but I'm adamant that we not let this go.
Well, we got a couple of weeks for ideas, if somebody has one. Our problem is being constrained by the Constitution. Yes.
I'm wishing we would have kept a bow on this, but too late. Can you go back to your slide where you call out the first list of MP projects?
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're talking about the full slide? That one?
Yeah, right there. And is it your thought that this group has to stick with that for whatever reason? Because if it wanted to connect, why did it draw a line through one of those projects and now you have connect? I just want to make sure that the group up here knows how married we are to that particular list. And if they suddenly say, no, we want to put $100 million a year into connect, I don't. But if we did, what happens, what damage is done to the overall program by drawing lines through some of those up there?
The answer to your question is first off, we're back to the analogy that I keep harping on, and that's Representative Smith and federal matching money. We've got a public entity, i.e. Metro JPAC, who's offered to match 50 cents on the dollar. So if we'll just say hypothetically you took the Rose Quarter off, that's the top one right there. And let me remind you, colleagues, some of these are hard to cut up, so you can't really cut them up. So if you just took one list off there, the $450 million off there, you remember we would gain $225 million out of our match on our side, but you would have lost the half.
Right.
You would have lost the half from the metropolitan area. And so, and then you would have told our colleagues that offered, they may on their side very quickly say, hey, you know, it's all or nothing because we're risking a whole broad range. I would propose to you that once again, if you took a $450 million project up there and you tried to cost contain it at 10%, you can do the mathematics, that's $45 million, mm-hmm. which then creates $22,500,000 on our side. A year. There are other ways to get creative on this than it is to say we're going to give up the JPAC or the Metro sharing. The second thing that I'd point out to you once again is that there are mechanisms out there. I mean, we could go back and add an escalator 4 years out of a quarter of a percentage points and do the same thing that you're doing, that you're suggesting. But the other area, since we raised it, is that we could step back, look at another area. I'm just trying to help you guys think through this, and that particular other area is called the gas tax and preservation and maintenance, and we could take preservation and maintenance funds and utilize that for some of the matching money up front for the joint projects in the metro area. So we could go back, and this is what we're trying to avoid. But let's just say there are multiple options that you need to creatively think through as individuals. And, you know, I mean, I would just point to my, he's not, hopefully not comment, but I would point to Senator Girard, who's looked at some of these things of how you could tier this and slide this and make this, you know, implementable in a different manner. And it's the same thing that goes here. You could, in fact, put some of the money, you know, initially up front. In the projects. And an example that has been discussed, he's going to cringe in the background, I apologize for this, but if you look at this list of projects that we have right here, those bottom projects, the zip lane, the pre-construction tolling, the active traffic management, and the bottleneck are all cash projects. Let me say that again, they're all cash projects out of that initial excise tax fund. Those are being cash projects, could be cash flowed temporarily using maintenance and preservation money if that's what we wanted to do. There are some alternatives out there. The last thing I want to point out, and I'm only slightly confused, and this is my own personal observation, not as a facilitator, so I do get to have an opinion here, besides being the person blamed and the facilitator here, and that is that, you know, I mean, the aggregate tax, even if we do it, doesn't consistently, at least the mechanism, raise enough money to fill the hole either. It's only a partial solution, is my observation of the aggregate tax, and so it isn't a full solution either. We still have to have some sort of other solution that's out there, and so my personal observation is, you know, though I'm opposed to the aggregate tax, fully open to listening to that personally, but the question is, it doesn't fill the hole, and so we're better off to look at other mechanisms to try and fill the hole. And that's my personal observation, not as a facilitator, just saying. I think I do 100% agree with Senator Taylor and representatives over here. Is that we have to find a solution for this, because 30,000 trucks, if we continue to grow at the rate we're growing, and if Representative Smith has his way in Eastern Oregon and they continue the way they grow, and they're doing a good job of it out there, we're going to overwhelm the ability to manage congestion in the cities unless we get some multimodal facilities up and transfer it to rail.
Thank you. I just want to really be really clear. Many of you are seeing this as congestion. These are the best intermodal projects for the Port of Morrow you could ever have. If we can clear out that bottleneck at I-5, you help the Port of Morrow and the Port of Umatilla, boom. If we can help out Powell Boulevard and help free up some congestion on 205, you help the Port of Morrow. And so I can share with you unequivocally, excuse me, we are 100% on board with these projects, and we're going to support them to the end because it benefits Eastern Oregon.
Shall we get on with it?
Senator?
I was listening very carefully to what Senator Smith said in his comment right before this last one, and what I'm about to say is going to test who's still awake in the audience. but I haven't done the math. I've just been sitting here thinking about your admonition that we have these multimodal projects that do so much good for cities, counties, ports, the state. What would happen if the share, the 50, 20, 30 share, was diminished by a small amount and contributed towards long-term funding for multimodal? Yes. Instead of going after an industry,
use the money.
Oh, you can't use it.
Yeah, it's just to bring everybody back on track, which is I get paid for here, okay? My 98 cents an hour is that gas tax registration, title fees are highway fund restriction, and we cannot do multimodal projects with them.
That's the
problem. The only other option that you would have, Madam Senator, is to propose a constitutional change.
Yeah. Nope, sorry. It's the lateness of the hour in my advanced age that caused me to veer off into the ditch. So
remember when we were in Ontario and they proposed a transfer station that would move freight from trucks to rail? That's the kind of thing. I mean, trucks in Ontario that are going for port all the way to Portland would be on rail instead. That's the kind of thing that we need to be pushing for. That really makes sense. And it has an impact on the movement of goods all across the state.
Okay.
Shall we go?
We beat this horse to death.
That nag can't.
If anybody
run
has
anymore.
Any bright ideas, as you go back and sleep on this.
Let us know.
We're trying to figure on this out.
We're ready to move on here in the last.
In the last 20 minutes.
20 minutes, and 40. I have a feeling we're not going to get through this, but that's okay.
Now we may be back on Monday night.
Okay, so accountability work group. And I have a, we have the slides that are up here, and then I have a list of questions that have been provided and the issues of accountability. And I guess the best way to approach this is that I'll run through the two slides that we have here. There's only two slides. Only these two slides are probably more like an hour worth of discussion. And I'll go through the slides, explain each one, and then we'll go back to the beginning. And I sort of have a list of questions and stuff that we've had. I think Representative Olson can jump in, too, and explain pieces, because once again, I was not on this work group. And so if you just start at the top, you can look at the sheet that's up here. We talked about better legislative oversight. There was a discussion on drafting and making that the Joint Transportation Committee would become permanent and have policy and budget authority. You recall we're talking about now, if you're using an excise tax of new projects coming back on a routine basis, we're talking about implementing the accountability. That's why the notion of a permanent Joint Transportation Committee was brought up. The requirement of Oregon Transportation Commission to provide the committee with its budget project lists and require quarterly project updates. This goes back to the issue if we decide as a mechanism to for cost containment to set aside, say, 20% of the major projects, which is then a funding source for multimodal or something along that line, is that, you know, we're going to have to, on a quarterly basis, pay attention to what those on an OTC and intensely manage those, especially considering the fact that presently OTC is a volunteer commission, too. Require ODOT Inspector General reports to be provided to the committee. And there's been discussion, and we'll come back to that. Expanded strength to OTC. I'm going to run through this list without looking at you, and then we'll come back to questions. Expand the OTC possibly to 7 members. We talked about maybe doing it by ODOT regions and then adding 2 additional members. The OTC members serve at the pleasure of the government, but have the public hearing option. If you're not familiar with that, is we have boards and commissions now in which if the governor decides they want to get to terminate a member of that commission, that member of the commission has a right to have a public hearing before the governor. It's not a prevention of the termination, and it's not like we come back to a hearing and a court hearing. It's just a hearing for the governor. We've talked about putting together an OTC staff, making sure that the OTC has a small independent staff outside of ODOT. OTC would appoint the Inspector General appoint the Director of ODOT both. OTC appointment of the ODOT creditor subject to Senate confirmation. OTC provides a biannual budget, establish stakeholder intermanagement efficiency and accountability committee. We need to come back to this. There's some discussion. Do we need to have an accountability committee if you're going to have an expanded OTC along that direction? In the transparency area, we talked about improving the project web, or developing a project website for the state and county city projects. Remember, this is the deal where we have project data. We have data from the counties that's on there. This is where we're talking about standardizing. It was in the slides previously, the standardization of roads, what's a poor road, what's a fair road, what's a good road. Having information on there, for example, as an inventory of the number of culverts, road miles, so on and so forth. Let me emphasize on the culverts inventory, not a status of them, but so certain amount of culverts above a certain size, say hypothetically 24 inches, so that we know what that maintenance requirements are out there. Project status, which is this one right here. Online log summarizing complaints and actions. This is Inspector General auditing. And then other related items that we had on the slide here that we have from before is establish joint reporting across the state, clarify city, county, special district contracting standards. We have some members that are working on an independent bill of this that's out there trying to get this solved. Review regulatory obstacles and streamline projects. Senator Johnson has harped on this for the entire 8 months we've been here, and this is another point of having a joint standing committee, because we haven't really addressed this issue, and we need to have a discussion of it, of what are those things. Because once again, even if we approve these mega projects that are in Portland, they're 2, 4, or 5 years away, and the fact of the matter is 2, 4, or 5 years away, we still have time to go back and figure out how to address the regulatory issues to streamline what's going on there. The rest area issue is going to come up again probably on Monday evening. We talked about that. We're centralizing the rest areas under OTI. The importance of that is public perception and having a single authority that's responsible for the rest areas for the most part and proving to the public that we have a good road system. Because they the first thing that they see after they hit the pothole is they have to go to the bathroom, and then they pull into the rest area, and we want to make sure the rest area has a good presentation. My wife can tell you all the way through Representative Smith's district to my ranch on the far side exactly the location of every rest area, whether it's city, county, or what it is, and whether it's clean and has a flush toilet, and she can complain about every one of them. And just to be quite fruitful, I go through Representative Pence's district and have the same thing going over the boundary. So,
which one's better?
That's right. And this is an important part because it's public. When we think about this, when you want to prevent a referral, when you want the public to believe that, you know, we're doing a good job, you want to have that good public image out there. And that's the importance of this one. That's been worked in one of the transportation committees that's out there. And then, you know, cost transparency and other issues. So I'm going to sort of, I think the best way to address this, I have a list of questions, is basically open it up to committee members, and maybe if the chair would indulge me, give Representative Olson a chance to, you know, talk a little bit about accountability and nuts and bolts, and then sort of go across to all the members, because this is, again, an area that's very hard to discuss.
So, Mr. Chair, I just want to kind of start out a little bit here with what Senator Boquist just said. You know, as you look at the top one there, there we go. Thank you. The Permanent Joint Transportation Committee, that was just kind of, we didn't really ever get into a great big giant discussion on this. This was just something that was thrown out the other night when we did do our presentation on this. It was similar to what the Washington model has right now. I do like that idea of having a joint committee that has both budget and policy authority to move forward. I think that creates great harmony between ODOT as well as OTC. So I see that that's up there now. So for our consideration, I would like to move forward with that idea. The next one that's up there is the requirement of OTC to provide committee with biennial budget. Essentially that's what we wanted to do, was shift and allow the Oregon Transportation Committee to have their own budget. Also then to start moving forward with what we're doing with the statewide transportation improvement program. We're under STIP. I'm just going to stop right there. I can keep on going on, but there might be other questions here because we spent quite a bit of time on this a few weeks back.
Is there, and I can go to the question. Senator Johnson can jump in here and save me right now.
I have two. One of them is that at the end of the accountability work group's work, a very thoughtful draft of accountability measures was put together and pretty widely circulated. It was my impression that it got a pretty good reception. So my question is, will that be the basis of the language? That's question number one. Question number two is, will we run this as two bills or as one? Because the accountability measures are a good thing per se. And then last but not least, some of the weeds on some of this stuff I think needs further consideration. For example, while it would be highly desirable to go out and count culverts, there are a jillion of them, and when we get, I don't know who's going to pay for the counting, and I don't know above and beyond the lists that ODOT has already what good that's going to do us to know that we've got a gazillion culverts that all need help. So I don't know whether it'll be off the jurisdictional share. Will counties or cities pay for that? Is it an ODOT responsibility? So I think we've got some weeds to work out.
Let me jump in there. I mean, you've probably heard this already, everybody, but there's somewhere between 200,000 to 250,000 culverts out there, and I don't know if that's the direction we want to go for, trying to track those.
Heather can probably listen to Mr. Chair.
The culvert issue, once again, is not tracking. If you recall it, in the governor's pledge and the vision panel, everybody says we have all these culverts to replace. The only question that's really come up on the culvert issue is that, as example, and we had a discussion with ODOT, in fact, and it's still going into today, is that, really the question is how many culverts do we have out there that are important that we need to know that they really need to repair? And it's not the notion there is, all right, Marion County has 2,617 24-inch culverts and larger. That's good enough information to know they need to maintain them and give them money. Right now, we have 36 counties in the state telling us, well, we have all these culverts, and we need you to give us preservation and maintenance money and not spend it on multimodal, which we can't do. And so the culvert discussion is more of an inventory discussion, and I think the ODOT has come back and said it maybe a 24-inch or larger is to know what it is. The other items on the webpage, though, are actually status or road miles. And we've sort of, that's one of the issues on here we talked about previously, and that is you know, if Hyderabad County X has 10,000 miles, how many of them are fair, poor, so on and so forth, so we know how much money we need to be applying to that. You're absolutely right. We don't need to go inspect culverts, but we do know that the cities and counties and the ODOT has said we need a gazillion dollars to fix these culverts, so the question is how many of the culverts do you have out there? It's not what's the list or the maintenance. It's just, do you really have X numbers? As to the bill and the accountability, the two other questions you asked, is my understanding is that to integrate it into one bill, that just be very blunt, that probably boils down to Vogt County. And then the second issue you had is the issue of the draft, and that's literally what we're having the discussion for right now is you know, some people have seen it, some haven't. What's inside of it, and what are the sorts of things that we want to make sure are inside of it? So, and with that, I'll let the chair, who I think has a comment or something.
Well, I think your comment, the whole idea of culverts and that has really becomes much more of a preservation maintenance issue. And it's just, I think ODOT knows where they are, and they address them as they do that stretch of road, except for the really, really big ones. And those become projects just like bridges, I believe. Right. But they know where they're at. I mean, that's really not a misconception if you think they don't know where they're at. Yeah.
It's also a target-rich environment for regulatory reform, because when you get agencies fighting with each other about what constitutes the proper repair, you got DSL, DEQ, ODFNW, ODOT.
Absolutely. From the director before that, they actually have a fairly good working relationship going on those now.
Representative Smith, over here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Presenter.
Facilitator.
Oh, right. Sorry, facilitator.
Flows into Johnson Creek.
So
that opened up.
I just wanted to comment briefly on this part. I think the accountability subgroup work group has done a lot of good stuff. My question is a little more about how prescriptive we want to be on this front in the bill, because these are some pretty significant changes to the structure that already exists. And while I respect that work that we've done here, there's probably an awful lot of details, you know, to what degree has ODOT been consulted about this, current OTC members, you know, there feels like a lot of prescriptive stuff in here that might be better served by establishing, you know, some joint group will set this up by rule. We'll actually spend some time working through these. Maybe we give a range of areas and make that final determination, rather than, with all due respect, kind of the three folks who were on the subgroup and whoever they heard from in their work group. So that's kind of my first overall comment/question. Or issue for discussion.
Using the prerogative of the chair, I would disagree and say that I don't think that is very detailed. It's pretty general in terms of, like, giving them the appointment authority and that. That is the stuff that's in the statute now that we have suggested changing. Your committee, the accountability committee, suggested changing some of the things that we heard loudly, like the ODOT director being appointed by the commission directly. That's what we heard. Governor disagrees with that.
Budget
but
and
that's
project,
what we heard.
You know, yeah. But the budget and project stuff, that seems like a pretty significant shift. This idea of having this permanent committee, and exactly what would it mean for us to have? Whose budget would we be overseeing? Would it be OTC's? Would it be this big? You know,
no,
mega projects. That's
that. I believe the intent there is the department budget. If you're going to have a strong commission, the idea would be that they would, and I think they do now, approve the budget.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
But anyway, I miss Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would like to hear from committee members what they discussed when it came to perhaps paying the new commission members. And because I'm having been on a much less difficult commission. It took an enormous amount of time, and of course, there were varying amounts of time spent. You guys must have discussed that possibility. Maybe you could share with us why you did not suggest that commission members be paid.
Very detailed stuff.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Benson and committee members, honestly, I don't recall us ever having that conversation along that line. We're staying consistent with what the laws are right now governing that.
I agree. There was no. We met with four OTC chairs to speak to Representative Smith Warner's question. And got the benefit of their input. Now, was that exhaustive? No, but it was certainly very informative. I would respectfully ask that the professional staff circulate the draft to the whole committee, because if some of us have had the benefit of reading what I think was a pretty good work product, it is incumbent for all of us to see it.
And then maybe we can come back next.
I would point out to you that it's 3 minutes to seven.
Let's do this.
And so, I mean,
this feels like it's a. I'm sensing people are wearing out a little bit. So it seems like we're meeting on Monday again.
And do we want to? Do we want to put the committee rough? Do we want to provide them the subgroups rough draft so that they can come back on Monday?
Absolutely.
I would think that would be very
good idea.
Okay. And just for the record, it is the work groups. Subcommittee first version draft, right? It's not a recommendation from us. It's for people to look at and go through. So that's for the record. And so, unfortunately, colleagues, I will see you Monday at 5:30. And your facilitator, not your presenter, your facilitator, right, who will be taking a poll between now and then on the Cray Cray committee name, will be around to see you.
To be clear, everything up to this piece that we've discussed is off to the Legislative Council to be drafted. Again, it doesn't freeze anybody in position. It's just a place to start. And think about over the weekend, think about alternative non-road fund uses to support the long-term plan.
Thank you.
Hopefully you have better thoughts than we have had. Or I should say more productive thoughts. Thank you all, and we are adjourned.